Welcome to Off the Cuff with SDJ, a podcast about everyday life from the spiritual, the physical, and the metaphysical perspective. Each week, I'll bring you episodes that have a casual, laid-back, informal, and spontaneous look at this thing we call life. I'm Sunny Dawn Johnston. Now let's get started. I'm so excited to have my friend Christy Blakeway here. Hey, sister.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I'm excellent. How are you?
I'm really good. Thank you. Good. All right, my friends. So those of you that are joining us, welcome to Off the Cuff with SDJ. We are here every weekday at 1:11 p.m. Pacific time, hanging out with cool people, change makers out in the world that are making a difference, big or small, and want to bring those insights and awarenesses and stories to all of you. So today we have Christy Blakeway. I want to read your bio real quick, Christy, before we get into the conversation. All right, my friend. Okay, so Christy Blakeway is a school principal in Vancouver, British Columbia, where she lives with her husband and two sons. She is the founder of Beyond Hello, a student-run initiative that helps the homeless share their stories in an effort to shift perceptions. Christy and her students have helped over 700 people living on the streets reconnect with their family through greeting cards, phone calls, and face-to-face reunions. Christy is a TEDx speaker, Olympic torch bearer, and the winner of the YWCA Woman of Distinction Award for Connecting Community. Christy encourages everyone to step outside their comfort zone, engage in soulful conversation, and connect with compassion. Awesome, my friend. Welcome, and thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So that's a lot. First question I have, there's so many amazing things that you've done, but okay, how do you get to be chosen as a torchbearer? How do you get that deal?
I have amazing students. And so what happened when the torch was going, when Vancouver was hosting the Olympics and the torch was going across the country, every province in Canada had the opportunity to have one school where students got to run with the torch. And so my leadership students that year entered a contest to say basically how we were helping change the world. And we won for BC. So 19 students and myself each got to run with the torch on the final day before the Olympics.
That is so cool.
Yeah, it was lots of fun.
Now, I'm not a runner. I actually don't ever run. Like, I don't like to run, but I might even run for that.
Yeah, and don't worry. They call it a run, but you kind of just walk with the torch with police all around you. So you don't really run. You just say you do. Yeah.
Oh, okay, cool. No, that's awesome. Yeah. That's awesome. All right, my friend. So we've got a lot of beautiful people on here today, and they're wanting to hear a little bit from you. It looks like some people that are actually from your area, from British Columbia. So,
perfect.
So let's talk about, first of all, let's talk about Beyond Hello. So, before we got on, my friends, we were just reminiscing about, Christy was sharing with me about how when we first crossed paths. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a funny story. So I'm going to let you share that. And then we're going to jump into Beyond Hello and what you're doing with it.
Sure. So I went to the Celebrate Your Life event, which was actually had a huge impact with Beyond Hello because it helped me kind of see my vision of what I wanted to do with our project. And my book ideas kind of came to light there. But the very first day I was there with my friend, Julie, and we had no idea we were lost. We thought we knew exactly where we were. And we were, I guess, I don't even know where we were in the hotel, but we were walking with purpose, thinking we knew exactly what we were doing. And we didn't have our name badges on or anything. We just looked like two hotel guests walking by. And you passed us going the other way and kind of paused. And so we came back and you said, by chance, are you guys trying to go to whatever part of the conference it was? And we said, yes. You said, oh, you're going the wrong way. Follow me. And so from that point on, we didn't know you were a speaker there or hadn't heard how amazing you were at that point. And so we just kind of kept referring to you to the nice, intuitive lady that knew we were lost every time we would see you at the conference. So then a few days later, when we saw that you're one of the speakers and we went to your workshop and we were blown away, we were like, no wonder she knew we were lost. She's good at reading the energy and figuring out where people are at. So thank you for guiding us to the right spot because I don't know where we were going.
Well, and what I told Chrissy, because I didn't know that story, she just shared it with me. And I said, well, that's a problem is sometimes I'm just in your heads. I don't mean to be, but I just kind of am. And so it just happens sometimes naturally.
Perfect.
So it's always fun to hear how we cross paths and how we connect, because really that's part of what Beyond Hello is about, is it's about how you are intentionally crossing paths with people that aren't always paid that much attention to. And
absolutely.
I love your story and what you're doing. So why don't you share a little bit about what Beyond Hello is and how it got started, Christy?
Sure. So I'm the type of person that writes lists for everything. Like if I wake up in the morning, I write a list, even on the weekend, it will drive my husband crazy. I'm like, this is what we need to do on the weekend. Everything has a list. And so most of my life is very planned. So Beyond Hello was supposed to be a one-day field trip with students on November 30th, 2009. And we were supposed to head to the downtown east side of Vancouver, which is the poorest neighborhood in Canada. And the idea was that my students would head there for this one-day field trip to help out. It didn't end. It was supposed to be 3 hours. That was almost 11 years ago now. So what happened was we initially decided we were going to, like many service groups, we wanted to give back to people on the streets. And so we decided we would collect food and clothing and whatnot and head to the streets and help. And it was getting closer to Christmas time. And so our students were really eager to go. And then there was an article in our local paper that talked about how many service agencies do the same thing in the winter months. Mm-hmm. And so I canceled our field trip. And our students were devastated because they were like, we wanted to go. And so we started to have a conversation around why did we want to go? And we realized that it was actually about us, that we wanted that feeling of giving to other people. And so we talked about what if you were on the streets and you never had that opportunity to really give because you didn't have the resources to be able to give things away like we want wanting to. So rather than handing out food and clothing, our students made blank Christmas cards. And our idea was to take them to the streets and give out blank cards and invite people to either give cards to people in their community on the street so they'd have Christmas cards to give away, or invite them to write cards to friends or family that they may have lost touch with, and that we would take the cards back and hopefully reconnect them. But we had no idea if it would work. So we headed to the streets with just a few students and randomly started asking people who were homeless if friends or family they wanted to write to. And luckily on that first day, we had about, yes, I'd love to write to my family. I haven't heard from them for years. And so when we went back to the school, our teenagers who are so great with social media got online with me and we started to find families. And we would pick up the phone and we would call a lot of wrong numbers too. But when we would get a right number, you know, families were crying, not knowing their loved one was still alive and saying, well, yes, I need to connect with them and please go tell them that I won't pay them. So then we started to get messages that we had to deliver back. And so we went back to the streets and then the cycle kind of started from there and is still going today.
I love it. I love it. So the response, was it more positive than negative as far as when people heard from the family members? I mean, I would imagine that you'd have some people that would be, you know, still in a place of, you know, I don't want to hear from them. Did you have any of that or was it mostly positive?
We do. What we kind of do a little bit of a training before we go to the streets now. And what I always say to the students is that you really need to use your intuition. Just like if you're walking through a mall and you're lost, if you look around, there's going to be people you spot that you feel comfortable going up and asking for directions. And there's going to be people that you think that's not the right person to ask. So we do the same thing when we're on the streets. We always start by making eye contact with people and smiling. And if someone smiles back, it kind of, oh, there goes one earphone. I have another one. We smile and we have conversation. And if people seem receptive, then we start to talk to them about their lives. And if people don't seem interested or look the other way, then we kind of go to the next person. Mm-hmm. So Initially, our plan was to connect through cards, and it was initially meant to be just a Christmas campaign, and then it kind of spiraled into Christmas and Mother's Day, and but then we actually got to a place in 2013 where I started to feel bad because we had sent cards to hundreds of people and helped families reach out, but sometimes we would be on the streets and there would be four or five people kind of living in the alleys or streets and waiting to write cards. And we would have like 5 minutes with each person. And sometimes they would start to open up. And for a lot of people, it brings up that raw emotion they may not have thought of for a long time. So they'd be in a vulnerable place and they would start to write to their mom or to their brothers or sisters. And you could see the emotion we were evoking. And at the same time, we had someone waiting like next in line, basically. So in a way we were like, okay, thanks, we'll put it in the mail, bye. And we were going to the next person. And it felt like we weren't time to their stories that were so raw. And so we changed our plan a little bit. And so now what we do is every month we go to the streets and we invite one person to come for breakfast or lunch with us, and we invite them to tell us their story, and then I blog about it in hopes that it will kind of teach compassion and shift the perception of homelessness as we tell people's stories. So that's why we call it HELLO. The HELLO actually stands for Helping Everyone Locate Loved Ones. And when we take people for lunch and have them tell their stories, we call it Going Beyond HELLO.
God, I love it. I love it. I think, you know, like when you were just saying, you know, when you got out there, you found out that a lot of communities do that type of stuff. And I have a foundation myself, and we do a variety of different things to raise money and then to serve. And that's one of the things that we've done many times is just get out there and help and support and just hit the streets, take food, take bags of clothing and things like that. But the part that is always the most interesting to me is never the giving of the stuff, although that's great and it feels good to be able to help. It's always the curiosity within me, because I'm a curious person, of their story. How did they get here?
Absolutely.
What was their journey? Where did it turn, if it did, because not always did it. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's a conscious choice. It's a healthier place, a safer mm-hmm. place than where they yeah. were. That's always the thing that's the most interesting to me, though, is the connection. So, and I mm-hmm. think that one of the things that you shared was how important you have found and how you're teaching these young people compassion.
Mm-hmm.
What a great lesson to learn and have the awareness of everyone having value, regardless mm-hmm. of their, you know, their circumstances or their environment. So when you think about compassion, what do you think that the kids learn the most? Do you think that they see the compassion and having compassion for others and it reflects back to have self-compassion? Or what do you notice that they learn that they really take with them?
I think when our students first get involved, they have different comfort levels. So sometimes we have students who want to help us do the research and make phone calls, but they're not quite comfortable heading to the streets. Mm-hmm. And then we have those who want to come with us and have the conversations. And often, just like I did, their initial time, they kind of go with that lens of expecting people to be different than we are and feeling a little bit fearful and being scared of what they might experience. And then after their first few hours having conversation, it's like this awakening that, oh my goodness, these people that we're talking to are exactly the same as us, and that they just have different experiences, like you said, that have led them a different direction. And so when we started chatting, we were talking about the Olympic torch, and the group of students that won the award to run with the Olympic torch, they are the same group of students that helped me start this project that year. And so at the end of that school year, we did like kind of this closing circle, reflective conversation. And I sincerely asked them, what was a more meaningful experience for you, running with the torch or helping the people that we had helped that year reconnect with families? And we had flown one family together and whatnot. And they were so offended that I even asked the question. Mm-hmm. They were like, how could you think we were that shallow that you would think that any of us would choose the torch? And mm-hmm. And yet that was such an honor that was a big deal too. So the students who have been involved have often said that it has guided them in terms of what type of work they go into, what type of programs they go into at university. Some of them have started their own types of charity work. And so I think we've all felt that we've learned way more than what we've been able to offer. And I think that's carried forward into whatever they do next.
Sure. Sure. I mean, it does never leave you, I don't think. After you've had experience like that, it reaches into your heart and it touches you in a way that you see life and the world and people differently.
Exactly.
You know, you mentioned being afraid, like some of the kids are being mm-hmm. afraid, and I'm sure even adults at different times. And, you know, it just reminded me, I haven't thought of this for years, but it reminded me of a program that I was in probably about 20 years ago. And I took this program, and one of the things that we had to do in a 2-hour time frame is we had to go out into the world somewhere, and we had to do something that made us nervous, that gave us butterflies and would scare us a little bit. And I was downtown Phoenix, and I don't get really afraid of things. Like, and you couldn't get arrested, so you couldn't do something that would cause you to be arrested.
That's probably a good guideline.
It is a game changer. And you couldn't do something that was to wrap up loose ends. So something that would scare you, like calling your dad that you hadn't talked to forever. Sure. And so I sat there going, gosh, I just don't really know what would scare me. What would really make that turn? And so then as I was driving around trying to think, I saw the park that all the homeless people live at in downtown Phoenix. And I got that little bit of feeling like, okay, mm-hmm. that I'm a single girl by myself. That might be a little bit scary.
Yeah.
And so I did. I went to Burger King. I bought 20, kids meals.
Yeah.
And I parked my car and I walked over there, and I was literally swarmed. They just swarmed me. And I handed out as many as I could. And what I noticed was my head. And I think this happens for a lot of people, which is why I'm sharing the story. My head was like, this should be a scary situation. My husband will kill me when he finds out that I did this.
Yeah.
But my spirit.
Yeah.
Was like, we're all just souls hanging out together, and
you
guys chose a different house than I did.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Although there were different experiences in that, what I was surprised by is that I thought that I would be nervous and have some fear. And what I realized is it was more of the training that I've had societally than it was me.
Right. Our parents tell us to lock your doors, right? Yeah. When you drive by, you lock your doors and you think it's going to be scary. And we just assume because people are in that situation that they must be scary. And certainly there are parts of neighborhoods that probably are scary. And there are parts of Vancouver that I don't take students to intentionally. Sure. But more so than not, the stories I also find that life kind of slows down because there isn't that same crazy pace. And so the people on the streets that we've met have had the most raw, soulful, meaningful conversations. And I think if I went into like one of the shopping districts of Vancouver and stood on a busy touristy street there and asked people to go for lunch and have conversation, they'd probably look at me like I was nuts versus the people on the streets that are kind of craving that conversation and living in isolation in many ways.
And craving the ability to be seen, to be seen and to be
witnessed
and to be held in sacred space and acknowledged as a being on the planet that has value.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'll tell you a little story.
Yes.
I was just going to tell you, whenever I talk about our project, I always bring this little rock with me. It's just like a tiny little pebble. And this rock is kind of what started it for us, and exactly what you were speaking of there. So when we first started, the very first man we met, who was actually at a homeless shelter, and we were helping serve a meal there, and his name was Irvin, and he was literally like our very first night that I had students with me, and we started by serving a dinner, and we sat down to eat beside him, and he told me it was his mom's birthday, and so I asked if he wanted to use my cell phone and give her a call, and he mentioned that his mom had passed away. So I said, oh, I guess you're not able to talk to her. And he looked at me like I was crazy and said, no, now I get to talk to her every day. But then he mentioned that he also had two sisters that he had lost. And so I asked what had happened. And throughout that dinner, he told the students and I about when he was 7 years old and he was living in Milwaukee, and he woke up to find his house on fire. And he was able to save one sister, and he wasn't able to get through the flames to the room where his other two sisters were, but he was able to wake up his mom, and his mom then attempted as well to save the girls. And he lost his sisters in the fire that night. His mom was injured, but survived. And like in that split second, it just completely shifted my perception of why people were in the situation, because here was a probably 50-year-old man who you could tell he went right back to when he was seven, and he was still at that same place and that trauma that he had carried with him. And so at the time, the shelters we had in the suburb we were in outside Vancouver, the shelters were only open for 6 months because the city felt the other 6 months it was warm enough to sleep outside. And so the last day of April, when the shelter was closing, and it happened to be snowing, I gave Irvin a lottery ticket, and I said, you know, I hope your luck changes. And he went to reach in his pocket and said, I have a present for you too. And we were kind of in this darker corner of this church where we were doing this dinner. And I thought, oh my God, what does he have in his pocket that he's going to pull out and give to me? And I was kind of scared, and he may have been a tad intoxicated. And I thought, what is happening? And he pulled out this little rock, and he told me that before the shelters opened, he was living under a bridge, and that some middle school students had given him cookies, but with it, with their teacher. But they had also given him this rock as a friendship rock and to remember that the community cared. And so he gave me the rock and said, I'm going to put the lottery ticket in my pocket in the same place, and I want you to keep the rock and remember that I care about the community too. So whenever I speak, I always have Irvin's rock close by, because that was kind of a game changer for us. It was like our first interaction, and we were like, oh wow, we had this all wrong about why people are here and in this position. So
That gives me the goosebumps. Doesn't it give you guys the goosebumps, that story? I love it. I love it. I think that it's such a there's so many different reasons why people are where they are, and a lot of times society just sits in judgment of, instead of trying to find that, you know, that compassion, whether it's something like his story, or whether there's some mental illness, or whether there's PTSD, is a big, big reason.
Lots of people on the streets were veterans.
And a lot of people. I mean,
the people we've met, I mean, they have been like professional athletes. Many have been married. Many have university degrees. It's not always that typical. You know, people often think that the drugs led to this, and here they are on the street. And yet there's always something associated with the addiction, some source of pain below that. And that often the drugs are a band-aid to the pain that they're living with. And so we always ask, you know, why the pain instead of just judging. So yeah, that's kind of the mission we're on now, is how do we tell the stories of the people from the streets in an effort to help others when they see someone approach through that lens of curiosity rather than judgment, because for sure every one of us has a story that's worth hearing.
Well, and sometimes there are many of us that it could be one more turn and we would have been right. You know,
there was one person who I met, they were talking about their childhood, and when it wasn't safe for their parents to go out and leave them home alone, but they needed to go somewhere. So when they were little, their mom would put them in the dryer so that no one would see them when they were home alone, so that it was safe. And I'm like, you know, everyone has ups and downs in their childhood, but certainly no one put me in the dryer, you know? So right. When you hear the stories, you think, where would I be if that was me?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. Oh, that's just awesome. So one of the things you talk about are that there are steps that we can take to help support the people that are invisible. So yeah. We're talking just typical everyday person that's watching right now. Mm-hmm. What can they do? What from your perspective, mm-hmm. what can we do to, you know, be of service or maybe be more compassionate or see through that lens? What are the things that you see, that little things that can just make a difference? Mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes when I talk and share our stories, people, like, it will come up that people aren't comfortable, as you mentioned, when you drove by that park and you thought, oh, how am I going to feel going in there? So certainly I don't expect people to have the same comfort level I do walking down a back alley. I definitely don't want everyone to be like, hey, we're headed to the worst part of our town right now. Mm-hmm. But I do think that every one of us has the ability to think about our own context and our own lives and think about who are the people that are kind of on the fringe somehow, whether it's as simple as thinking about where you work and that colleague who eats alone and doesn't, you know, join people at the table for lunch. Maybe it's a neighbor on your street that you don't know or you haven't said hello to, or maybe it's a friend that you think of that you haven't talked to. I think that every one of us has the opportunity to think about people in our own lives that are looked past and that people don't reach out to as much, or that might be in isolation, especially right now with this current context and people, you know, being kind of forced into isolation more so, that every one of us has that ability to pick up the phone and make a phone call, or to buy someone a cup of coffee, or to just approach through that lens of curiosity and getting to know someone's story. Sometimes we go through our routine and we, you know, the same barista makes your coffee every day for 5 years, but you don't know more than maybe their name. And, or maybe it's the custodian at work who, you know, comes in and cleans the building, and you know, then again, you might know their name, but you don't know a lot about them. I think we each have that opportunity to see other people. And because as we get to know someone else's story, not only do we see them and make them feel valued, we learn so much as well, and are able to connect, because we're all way more alike than different. It's hard mm-hmm. to dislike someone when you know their story.
Right. Yeah. And I think it is. I think curiosity is a good word. I'm trying to think, and like, and from my perspective, there aren't many people that get by me that I don't know their story. And it's just because I'm always that is like, I really actually, that's why I'm doing this right now. This podcast is because I really, I love humanity, and I love the similarities that we have, and I appreciate the differences, but I'm always curious as to why do they show up that way? Why does it, like, okay. And I want to hear the why, because it helps me to have a greater sense of compassion and appreciation for life in general on all levels. So that, I think that's a great point, because I remember having these conversations with my husband. So my husband doesn't really want to hear people's stories. Not really interested in conversations with people. When he was a contractor. So when he would go out to do a bid and you know, he'd come home and he'd say, okay, I got this job for whatever I'm going to do, build this extra thing on this house. And I'd be like, oh, so, you know, who'd you go? Well, why do you want to know their name? Just because I want to know their name. Okay. And then he'd be like, oh, it's Mary. And then, well, how many kids did they have? What does she do for a living? I'd ask all these questions. He's like, I'm just doing the job, Sonny. I don't care about all that. I'm like, how could you not care? Like, that's the most important thing. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So
exactly. I love it.
So yeah. So I asked
my husband.
Go ahead, Christy.
Oh, sorry. No, I was just going to say, my husband's the same way. Like he's a police officer, so he gets to engage in people's stories all the time, but I want to know all the details that he's like, no, I don't know. But the other thing he teases me about is that if we're actually going to go out, like if we were going to go on a date and do something for a day, you know, other people might want to go to a nice restaurant. I'm like, well, I'd rather, you know, maybe the two of us could take a homeless person for lunch. Like, there's always like the third wheel on our date. Uh-huh. Like, there's uh-huh. some random man named Danny sitting at the table with us. So anyway.
That's great. Okay, I've got a couple questions for you.
Yeah.
That are showing up here. So Rick asks, do many of the homeless people that you've met want to not be homeless? Because there are people that they choose that. That's why they're living in that environment, because they actually want to. But would you say that most of them do not want to be, or would you say that, that the majority of them do?
Well, in some ways, there's a comfort that comes from the community that they live in. So even when we've had situations where we've helped someone reconnect with their family or help someone get into treatment and get become clean, there is a safety within their community that that's a place where they're accepted. There's low judgment in the community. So there's that. It is hard to get someone to move from the community that they are in. I don't think it's a question of whether they want to be homeless or not. It's whether they feel they're worthy of more. And that so often, and the men and women are different. Men and women are definitely different. The women, when we give them an opportunity to reconnect, like if we go and we say, we found your daughter or we found your mom or your sister and they'd love to talk to you, they are ready that second, like hand me the phone, get the airline tickets, let's do this. And then, you know, all of a sudden the past becomes irrelevant and they're ready to communicate. For the men, they want us to tell their family they love them. They want us to send nice messages back and they want us to do the phone calls. But almost every time there's so much shame that they don't feel worthy of that self-love. So I feel like so many times with the people we meet, they do, I always ask where they think they'll be in 5 years. And long-term people do hope that circumstance, but they don't feel they're ready because they don't feel they're worthy of it. And they all often blame themselves for the circumstances they're in or the pain that they may have caused their families. So I think that emotional healing has to happen first before they, I don't think that giving someone like a, you know, here's a house, here's some food, I don't think that would actually change their circumstances without doing the emotional work and healing of that really is why they're there.
Yeah, you can't take them just out of the environment and expect them to show up differently without doing the healing work around it, certainly.
Yeah.
So have you had...
And so often the shelters are not safe. So, you know, often people are given options to stay in shelters, but the shelters themselves that I've spent a fair bit of time in, again, naively, I just assumed they were kind of like a cheap hotel. Like I thought you'd walk in, there'd be a nice bed, it would be simple, a washroom, a nice bed, it would be clean. But that's not what shelters are like. Mm-hmm. So the first time I went into shelter, there wasn't even beds. It was a church that had been converted into a shelter and people were sleeping on pews and all over the floor. And then in Vancouver, we have what we call SROs, which are single residence occupancy housing shelters. And while they have good intention, there's so much addiction and poverty and whatnot in one space that the building itself is not a safe environment. So especially for the women, they'll often choose to be outside instead.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's so many, there's so many different components to it. It's certainly not a simple, there's not simple answers. It's complicated because there's,
exactly.
But we do know that love, compassion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's the thing. I mean, the people we talk to, their stories, you know, after a few hours, I'm ready to go home and I'm ready to get in my car and come. A comfy little life. And yet the people that I'm leaving have that grit and resilience and courage to basically, you know, continue to survive in the environment they're in. And so in some ways they have such strength to be able to sustain, you know, the life they're in that I don't even imagine. And we've been able to learn so much. Mm-hmm. I have to share with you one of my favorite stories, if that's okay.
Yeah, I'd love to, because I've got a couple of people that are asking questions about different people are asking about how families, if they've met, how they've worked out, and if people have actually gotten off the street. So yes, please share a story or two.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. Perfect questions too. So because those totally tie in. So lots of stories, but I'm going to tell you my favorite one. So my favorite one was when we decided to go beyond hello and do more than the cards itself. So we decided to take someone for lunch. So we started by handing out water bottles on the street, just trying, like you said, when you hand out something, that's the first step, but it's the conversation that so some people would take the water, they'd walk by and we would know that wasn't the, you know, the right person to invite for lunch. But this one lady, Cindy, I handed her water and she looked at me and she said, "I am starving and I'm on the streets and you hand me water. Like, what is that going to do?" I'm like, "Well, we were just about to go for lunch. Do you want to come with us?" And she was like, "Fine." So she was basically giving a shit the whole time. And she was walking like in and out of traffic. And it was a bit of a gong show. But when we sat down with Cindy on for our first lunch, she opened up. She had been quite suicidal. But she said the reason she was still alive was that she had hope. She was living with hepatitis, heroin addiction, and HIV. But she held on to the hope that she would one day meet her daughter. She had given birth to her daughter, about 25 years ago at that point, I guess, and, in Ontario, so the opposite side of our country. And, she was in an abusive relationship. So she had made the decision to, put her baby up for adoption. And so fast forward 25 years and she's on the streets in Vancouver. And she just said, that's the one thing that kept her alive was, could she ever meet her daughter? And so I have a few photos I'll show you. So this is Cindy. That's Cindy when I first met her and we're sitting on the street together. And so that night I came home and all I knew was the name of her daughter, Paige, that Paige was in Ontario and that she wanted to find her. I didn't even have a last name. And I felt that I'd actually gone too far because as I drove away, Cindy was sobbing after opening up this whole story and clinging to a parking meter. And I'm like, I am a horrible human. Like, how did I just bring that all up out of this woman and then drive away? So I started searching social media that night and I became a little bit of a stalker. And I started looking for like anyone named Paige in Ontario, just like, please help me find this person.
And Ontario is a big place, right? Like, we're in the United States, but Ontario is like a big place. It's not like this little, you know, little town. No.
It's probably similar size to, say, like Washington State. And okay. So, like, yeah. You know, there's a lot of people named Paige there. Mm-hmm. And so I found one that had the same birthday. So I thought, this is good. But I could tell she hadn't been active on her Facebook account for about 3 years. So I thought, well, even if I send her a message, she's never going to see it. So then I started stalking her friends list, thinking, well, someone can find her. And it ended up that this guy popped up that where we had a mutual friend across the country somehow. So one of my students had gone across the country for university. He had his roommate was friends with this person named Paige. So he ended up tracking her down for me because he said, yes, she was adopted. So this might be the right person. So within a matter of days, this woman named Paige called and she was so excited because we were able to confirm that that was her mom. She had just requested her birth record. So she had her mom's name, but she had no idea where to start searching. And so I told her, I said, well, before I tell you about your mom, I need to tell you, it might be hard to hear. Your mom is in a bit of a dark place. And she said, no, like I actually struggled with addiction myself. And I understand that journey. And so I've even read a book about the downtown east side of Vancouver. And so there's a book written by an author called Dr. Gabor Mate called In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts. And it's an amazing book. And what he did is he wrote about people living in Vancouver's downtown east side and told their stories. And so she had read the book and she said that's what had actually got her clean when she started to struggle with addiction. And there was one chapter in the book called Pregnancy Journals about a woman who was an addict who named Celia. And Celia got pregnant in Vancouver and talked about her struggle to try and keep her baby. And so when Paige was reading this book, she was so moved that she actually wrote to the author, to Dr. Gabor Mate, and thanked him and said, this is why I'm clean. I wanted to be clean before I had children myself and whatnot. So she said to me, you got to read that book one day. I'm like, okay, that's great. And by strange coincidence, I didn't know Dr. Gabor Mate at the time, but he had actually heard of our project. So he had mailed me a copy of the same book and written a note inside to me. And I'd like put it on the shelf and I hadn't really, you know, I hadn't read it. And so when I went back to the street, so I went back and I found Cindy. This is where Cindy and I are standing. You can see how skinny, You can see how skinny she is there. Mm-hmm. And that's when I told her that I had found her daughter. And I said, by the way, I said, your daughter actually read a book about this neighborhood in the realm. I said, by Dr. Gabor Maté. And she goes, that's my doctor. And I'm like, that's your doctor. And she goes, are you talking about In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts? And Cindy was like kind of, you know, drugged out at the time when I was talking to her. So I thought, how does she know the name of this book? She's like, that book's about me. In the book, my name's Celia. Mm-hmm. So it turned out that Paige had actually been reading about her birth mom and had written to the author to say, it changed my life, not knowing that she was reading about her own mom. So, so it was pretty crazy. So we agreed we needed to fly them together and fundraise and fly them together to connect. And so we said to Cindy, we will fly her here. You guys can meet each other. And she was like, no chance, no way, no how. She's like, I've been on the streets for 20 years. My daughter is not going to see me like this. She said, I need to be clean first. So she went into rehab the next day. She was in rehab for quite a few months. And then her nurse would stay in contact with us. And then when she was ready, that year for Mother's Day, we flew Paige out here, and you can even see the physical difference. That's Cindy and Paige when we reconnected them for the first time. It was 2014. And Cindy stayed off the heroin ever since. And this is just this winter. Oops. Left, right. I don't know if you can see that one. Cindy's on the side there. Mm-hmm. You can just see how much healthier and happy she looks since their connection. Yep. So, yeah. So we've
that
had,
is
that's
awesome.
My favorite because of the kind of miracles that go along with that story. But we've had many not as miraculous, but
yeah, that's right? A spirit guided story.
How does that happen? Okay. You know?
Well, that happens with spirits, energy, and a lot of angels. That's how that happens. That's freaking awesome.
Exactly. That's kind of when I started to realize this is not just about the work my students and I are doing. Like, we can't make that happen. There was just too many little miracles along the way. So, but it is kind of when we realized that our project needs to just keep going, and we need to keep. Now, when we go to the streets, we kind of do a little bit of a, I don't know, we get there and where I basically think about all the people that we've helped and think, okay, bring the right person to us today so that we can hear their story and help. So far.
Yeah. What a beautiful story. Everybody's talking about how they have goosebumps and they're in tears and all of that. So that's beautiful, Christy. I love it. I love it. I love it. I love it. So if people, I've got one gal that actually is in your community. So if people want to get a hold of you, if they want to, I assume you do donations. If people want to come and help, where do they go? They go to beyondhello.org.
Yeah. So that's the easiest way. If you go to www.beyondhello.org, it has my contact information there, but it also has each of our stories that we post every month. So I always post the stories there as well. I'm always open if people listening want to share their stories of how they reached out and connected with someone, whether it be simple as connecting with someone in your neighborhood or whether it is approaching someone who might be on the streets and helping out. I'm always happy to have people guest blog and share their stories of connection as well. So contact me through beyondhello.org and hear what people do to reach out and go beyond hello in their own communities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the goal really is just to create the connection. And the connection can be, it doesn't have
Absolutely.
To be somebody on the street. It's just creating the connection. And they're really, I mean, yes, there are a lot of different ways to create connection. And we got to get a little creative now because things are a little bit different, but all
For
of you
sure.
have the ability to be able to do that. So not using the pandemic as an excuse and instead maybe as a reason why to reach out, why to show up to people that may be isolated and separated. So that's just, it's awesome. I love the story. I love the work you're doing. It's fantastic.
Pretty funny too, because I told Cindy, we ended up as when Cindy was pregnant in the book, it was with her second daughter, that had also gone into care. But so roundabout story, someone actually came across my book where I tell the stories, and when they read it, they thought, oh my goodness, I think I'm raising Cindy's other daughter, who's now 14. And so we connected and we figured out that, wow, we found her next daughter as well. So, we were planning to do a reunion, and then COVID happened, and it, like, you know, the world shut down. And so I said to Cindy, like, I'm sorry, I can't reconnect you right now. We're going to have to wait till it's a little bit safer. And so Cindy and her boyfriend, Ron, phoned me from, you know, the streets of Vancouver. And they were like, have you heard of this thing called Zoom? Like, yeah, I've heard of Zoom. Have you? They're like, well, we've heard of it, but can you teach us? Because we're not understanding why we have to wait. And I'm like, oh, that's a very good point. So I said, if you can find Wi-Fi, I can teach you. So we actually did a reunion with Cindy and Ron from the downtown east side of Vancouver with their other daughter. Oops, I'm not supposed to say her name. we connected them through Zoom. So yeah, sometimes we put up these boundaries that are not there. There's other ways to do things.
The name didn't come through either. It cut out. So you're okay.
Oh, perfect. Excellent.
So that gal has some freaking angels around her. That's amazing.
Right?
Freaking amazing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Absolutely.
Okay. So yes. Yeah, so beyondhello.org, my friends, or your book is Beyond Hello, Rekindling the Human Spirit, One Conversation at a Time on Amazon and Barnes and Noble. So you guys can grab that. With each book sold, the proceeds buy a meal for someone living on the streets. Okay. So that's fantastic. Some of you are asking me what my foundation is. So I have Sunlight Alliance Foundation. The most recent thing that we've done is called Hearts Helping Humanity. It's a group on Facebook and what we're doing is we're actually creating a community where if people need help, they can go to that page, ask for help, and then we are supplying the help, food or household goods. So things that are necessary and needed at this time during the pandemic. That's where the money that you donate and the energy has been going. So if you're interested in that, go to Hearts Helping Humanity on Facebook and you can go check it out there. So you've got a couple of people that are going to come and connect with you, Christy, down the road. Awesome. Tracy Smith is one of them. So, all right, let me ask you a couple of just personal, fun, off the cuff questions because this is off.
Okay, I'm ready.
All right.
I feel like I'm on a game show.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I like to do. What is the first thing, if you remember, what is the first thing that you bought with your own money?
Oh, geez. With my own money. Mm-hmm. Huh. Well, I do remember when the tooth fairy would come. My great aunt and my grandparents were awesome. They would always forget to take the tooth. So the tooth fairy would come like night after night after night. So I'd kind of collect my coins and we'd probably go to the store near our cabin. So probably candy.
Okay. That's a bad, yeah, for sure. Yeah, they had back in the day, they had the 10, right? 5 cent, 1 penny gum.
Exactly. My tooth fairy money. Mm-hmm. Well spent.
Yep. What was your first job?
Ooh, well, my very first job, my mom, I haven't mentioned my mom yet. That could be a whole other show. My mom used to, this wouldn't count as a job, but again, in the summer, there was a campsite near the cabin we had. And so my mom would have us row our boat across the lake to the campsite. And then my brother and I would go through the garbage cans and we would collect all of the cans and then we would bring them back and return them and get money. Mm-hmm. And then she also had a catering business that she used to get us to help at. So we probably did that first, but my first paid real job, like on paper, I worked at a kid's clothing store.
Okay. Okay.
Not quite as exciting as the things my mom made me do.
You had some adventures there.
Yeah.
Okay. What is the funniest thing or the most embarrassing thing that's happened to you recently?
Oh, geez. Okay. So these things happen to me all the time I don't know. Okay, the worst one that I share a little bit, because I pride myself on connecting with people. It's kind of my thing. I love that. Well, I went to this party, and back when you were allowed to go to a party when it was still safe and there was a gazillion people in the house. And there was this woman across the room, and I kept smiling at her, and she would smile at me, and I knew her, but I couldn't place her. And so finally I thought, I'm just going to ask. Maybe it was the wine, I don't know. So I just said to her, I know we know each other, but I just can't figure out how. And she looked at me and she said, I was your best friend all through university. I came to your cabin every single summer. I'm like, that's it. And then, you know, I haven't really got past it. So now I don't ever, like, as soon as someone says nice to meet you, I say nice to see you. Because if I say nice to meet you, they're going to tell me they were my best friend and I forgot them. So I just pretend I know people now and like, nice to see you.
So does she
and
talk
I never ask.
Are you friends still or no?
Well, and that's the thing. I'm still thinking, well, then what happened? Like, did I forget to call her back? Like, how did we have a fight that I don't remember? Anyway, just of course, the way the world works, our kids have actually become really good friends and ended up at the same high school. So now I see her and we just say hi. But yeah, I don't know what happened. I don't know how my memory just kind of failed me for a decade or so.
Oh, or maybe you don't want to remember.
I don't know. She seems lovely. Like, I can't really figure out what happened there.
Okay. That is hilarious. Oh my gosh. That's funny. Yeah. I learned not to ever ask anybody when their babies do. That's what I learned.
Oh yeah. That's so, a bad
in
one
the
too.
Same kind of situation of embarrassment. And for sure, like I swear it was a maternity. This was 20 years ago, but I learned never, ever, ever, ever say that.
Yeah. Just don't do that. Yeah. That's a good one.
All right. Last question. If you had a message to share with those that are listening right now as a last parting message, what would it be, my friend?
I guess just that every one of us have the ability to connect with compassion. And I think that every single one of us is meant to connect. Some of us might be quieter and introverted or whatever it might be, but that really, as human beings, we are meant to connect. And so when you think of someone and they're on your mind, or whether you see someone and you do that kind of second look, to take that opportunity to say hello, to invite them for whether it's a cup of coffee or sometimes it's just eye contact, right? But just to take those little steps to show somebody else that you see them and value them, because you never know how much that can change their day.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Awesome, my friend. Thank you so very much for joining
us. Thank you.
Everybody's feeling so inspired. We've got all kinds of comments and about all the beautiful work you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all for watching.
Awesome. Thanks, Sunny.
Yeah, you bet.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Thank you, my dear. Thank you, everyone, for watching Off the Cuff with SDJ. I'm here every day at 1:11 p.m. Pacific time, every weekday, I should say that. Tomorrow, I don't know what we'll be talking about. It's Off the Cuff. Thursday, I have my guest, Marlo Ellis, will be here with us, and she will be talking about writing a new story, creating your own new story. So thank you guys so much for joining. And yes, please go and connect with Christy and Beyond Hello. Go check out her work. She takes donations. If you've got some extra energy to donate, please feel free to do that. She's doing great work in the world, as you can see. And yes, Hearts Helping Humanity is the name of the community that we've been focused on. Sunlight Alliance is the foundation, but Hearts Helping Humanity is where our attention is. So thanks guys so much. Have a fantastic day. Love you all. Mwah! Thank you so much for listening to Off the Cuff with SDJ. If you gained some knowledge, if you felt a connection, if you got some ahas or insight into this thing we call life, if you feel like you're a little more elevated than you were before you listened to this podcast, then please subscribe to this podcast. And if you're already signed up, please rate and review it. I'd greatly appreciate it. If you want to get more information about me and what I have to offer, go to my website, sunnydonjohnston.com. Thanks so much, my friend, and I hope to see you next week.